passe un super artiste, super encore un but sensationnel. That's a brilliant bit of follow-up play by Mahé. Oh my goodness me, what a shot!
Sagosen, Sagosen setter det hen! Han setter den! De I semifinale igjen!
Hello and welcome to another edition of The Morning Club. This is a special free version of The Morning Club. So for anyone who is not a Patreon supporter of The Handball Hour, we put out a weekly shorter episode reviewing one specific topic usually and whatever is happening in the handball world. So that comes weekly and is exclusive to Patreon members. So if you are interested in getting this bonus content, then sign up for our Patreon at patreon.com/handballhour. It's just the equivalent of $3 a month in your local currency plus VAT. So very handy to get access to the bonus content. So you have a little taste of it now. It's Alex Kulish here with Chris O'Reilly. How you doing, Chris?
Good, Alex. Good. Really excited for the next few days of Olympic qualification tournaments.
Yeah, it really did sneak up on us. It kind of came out of nowhere. This whole international break did kind of sneak up on us as action in the leagues and the Champions League was really getting to the big spots. We got a little break, but some really good games coming up over the weekend, the first of which is going to be on Thursday and then play all the way through the weekend. So there is three groups of four teams in Tournament 1, which is hosted in Granollers in Spain. We have Spain, Bahrain, Slovenia and Brazil. A nice group there. Then Tournament 2, hosted in Germany in Hanover, is Germany, Algeria, Croatia and Austria. And then Tournament number 3, hosted in Hungary, guessing there.
Tatabánya.
Yes. Yep. Hosted in Tatabánya in Hungary is Norway, Portugal, Hungary, and Tunisia. So out of the three tournament, which one is the most interesting for you?
I think it's a toss-up between number 2 in Germany, number 3 in Hungary, because you have the three European teams in them. And I mean that not in any way against the rest of the world. We're all always fans of the rest of the world. But like the Olympic qualification tournaments are, in a way, the most like intense events you can have in such a short period of time. Because the Olympic Games, with only 12 teams that get into it, is such a huge thing in handball for both men and women's teams. They build up to them throughout the years. And then in the case of 4 days here, everything is decided. This like last chance for teams. And so, you know, you look at today's games, for example, in Hanover, where it's Croatia versus Austria, that's basically a decider on day one for which team will join Germany. But maybe group three, because it's Norway, Portugal, and Hungary alongside Tunisia, who are a fantastic team on a given day, and three European teams who literally you have no idea what's going to come from them, that could be the most open one. And that's going to get very sweaty, I think, over the weekend in Hungary. So maybe that one.
It's a good one. Again, it's going to be Croatia playing a tournament with Dagur Sigurdsson at the helm straight away. That's a big pressure situation for Sigurdsson to just step into. So literally his first camp with the squad.
Yeah.
And he's going to be playing this tournament. We'll have to see if Austria have kind of the same energy that they had in the European Championship, the same momentum, and what Algeria can do. But yeah, I agree. In terms of like the non-European countries, there's a little bit of... It's unlikely that they'll get through. You know, you have teams like Algeria and Tunisia. Well, Tunisia are a team who kind of stepped back a little bit in quality over the last couple of years. Algeria have kind of stepped up again, but they're both, let's say, a level below. Bahrain, we know, are a fantastic team, but after their brawl in the Asian Championships. They are missing four players, I think, including their talismanic captain, Al Sayed. So again, Bahrain kind of knocked out of there. Brazil, you always want to see qualifying. Let's see if Brian Monte can do anything for this Brazil team, kind of inspired him again. But yeah, tournament number three is just, it's just a wild card.
Yeah.
Who wants it more? Norway, Portugal, Hungary, or Tunisia?
I mean, based on what we saw at the Euro a couple of months ago, you'd have to say Hungary and Portugal are favorites to take those two spots. Two teams qualify from every group for the Olympics. But Norway, you know, they're missing Magnus Thrud, they're missing Jørgen Sugard. You know, they were so bad for them at that European Championship, and then they absolutely smacked Sweden in their last game. Kolstad have had a terrible time since then. Yeah, like, I have a feeling like they won't just like go away quietly. I think they might upset one of these teams. Like Sander Saugesen and Torbjørn Bergerud would just like have this amazing game. Tobias Grundahl, now that he's been allowed to play for the team, I think they'll come up with a win against one of the two of them, and we could have like a three-way tie at the end of that weekend. On paper, I'd say Hungary and Portugal, but something is telling me that Hungary might just have a tough time at home and miss out.
Oh,
which would be devastating. And we're all fans of Hungary now. And we have been. But like, they were such a likable team in that championship a couple of months ago. But yeah, I think a bit like there's always a team that you expect to qualify who misses out at this stage. 4 years ago, it was Croatia, Spain before that missing out on Rio. I think it could be Hungary this time.
I don't know. I'm sick of rating Norway.
Yes, you're over it.
I'm over it.
Yeah.
They haven't done anything in a long time. They're missing some of their best players. Sagesson, while is incredible, just has somehow just lost the ability to play handball in the second half of the season. And
that's when they get you, Alex. That's when they get everything suggesting that they're gonna do nothing this weekend, and that could be finally the time they do something again. Whereas Hungary are now expected to qualify, which worries me.
That is a classic turn of events. Hungary, with any expectation, do struggle. Yeah, and then it's always. I think that group one is also interesting in terms of one is looking at Spain because, well, they need to bounce back after a terrible European Championship. Any sort of failure in this tournament, which, you know, Slovenia did better than Spain in the Euros, and Brazil have, you know, they have played Spain tightly in previous games. So it's not a complete walkover. And if Spain fail to make an appearance at this championship and qualify for the Olympics, you know, this would be huge alarm bells ringing for the Spanish squad.
You know, there was a lot of talk about this Spain team during the Euro about like, okay, now it's really time for them to start the change in like transition in players because they're just not up to it anymore. And I'm afraid they haven't done that. they've actually dug their heels in even deeper, it seems. There's a Jordi Ribera's 19-man squad. We'll see which of them actually play. But Gedeon Guardiola is back in the squad. Rodrigo Corrales, probably a good decision to bring him back. But here's one who, you know, 4 years ago, we thought this was a bit mad. Antonio Garcia is back in the squad.
God damn it.
Right? I was reading this. I was like, is this just like a copy and paste from the 2020 games or what? It's incredible. that worries me a fair bit, to be honest. And yeah, I mean, as long as you have the Dushabayevs doing the business, well, they always have a chance. But yeah, maybe Brazil, if they could, they'd be pretty comfortable, I think, in these settings playing in Spain. A lot of the players have played or do play in Spain. It's not going to be. They've got really nothing to lose as well. And we saw that Brian Monte hit incredible form just like in the last couple of weeks with Montpellier. And where did he do that? In Spain against Barca. So everything pointing towards maybe something special in Slovenia. Yeah, they've got Blažjanc back in the squad. They were a positive surprise at the Euro, I think. Wouldn't count them out at all. So, yeah, again, maybe another host nation who could be in trouble there in Spain.
Let's see. I think it's not a walkover, and a failure here could, you know, I don't know if it would start talk of a change in coaches, but you know, it wouldn't make things comfortable for Jordi Ribeiro.
Yeah. What I found remarkable is that Antonio Garcia has just turned 40. I feel like he's been 40 for about 4 years now, but yeah. No, he's actually just turned 40 a couple of days ago. So, but still, if you're bringing back like 40-year-old goalkeeper, yeah, 40-year-old winger, yeah, but left back. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he's just in there like to steady the ship a little bit. But that does worry me slightly. In that group too, then, with Germany, Algeria in the first game, we feel like Germany should get off to a good start there. But again, we never know Germany. And then Croatia, Austria. Like that is a headline game for me. Nothing suggests to me that Austria won't come into this with the same good vibes as they did. And they only have to play 3 games in 4 days this time. They have a chance, I think, which would be like an amazing rise in the space of a few months from complete outsiders to qualifying for the Olympics. That would be one of the stories of the season.
Yeah, it would. And we're talking about this Croatia-Austria game as pure knockout. But again, Germany are not miles ahead of those two teams.
In fact, they drew against Austria just a couple of months ago.
Austria, yeah. And they also played Croatia, right?
They did in the last. They lost to Croatia in the last main round game. Exactly. Yeah. So, based on that, there might be outsiders.
The Germany are the outsiders here based on performance. So it's going to be fun to see how it shapes out.
Which two teams are going to qualify from each group, Alex? What are your picks? Tournament one in Spain.
I'm going to go with the heart, Spain-Brazil, even though I think Slovenia will probably make it ahead of Spain. Tournament two, I think Germany and Croatia will make it. And then tournament three, that's where Portugal and Hungary are going to make it and Norway are not.
Okay.
That's what
I will go with Spain and Slovenia and Brazil just missing out. Tournament two, Germany, Austria, and that may be a bit more of a heart choice than a head choice. Tournament three, yeah, to mix it up a little, Norway, Portugal. Tunisia will get a result against Hungary in the first day and just like mess it up for them. But yeah. I'm really excited about it now. It's really open, all three groups in some way or another. I think there's going to be some shocks. Yeah.
And all the games are live on the IHF YouTube channel, unless, of course, it's in you're living in one of these home countries. So for everyone else, you can watch every game.
Nice. Good. Then before we let you go, a quick word on a game we were really looking forward to, which happened on Sunday. The top of the Bundesliga clash between Magdeburg and Berlin. Magdeburg getting the win and basically going top of the table. What did you make of it?
It's just Magdeburg being so strong. They keep winning these games by 2 goals. It's just like every tough game that they've had over the last while in this extremely tough stretch.
Yeah.
They just win by 2 goals because they're almost like an experienced boxer who just shadow boxes for the first couple of rounds, and then gradually you're not really seeing them getting better and better, but their punches are like landing a little bit harder, a little bit harder. And then at the end, it's a complete knockout. And
well, they won this one by three, but yeah, I get your point.
You know, I think it's that slight difference of, it's not like a one goal tied game. It's not a demolition. It's just consistent, comfortable being better than the other team. And in this case, they use their squad really, really well. And Fuchs of Berlin just didn't have the team to match up with them.
Just looking at the stats for that really puts an emphasis on your point there when it comes to the squad. Because the top scorer they had was Omar Inge Magnusson with 7, but 4 of those were penalties. And then it was a proper spread of, like, you know, Saugster up on the line with 6, Hornka on the wing with 5, and then you had Mertens on the other wing with 3, Klar with 4, Smarrison with 2, Christiansen with 2. Just like everyone getting, like, chipping in. Nobody relied on fully to get the job done, which is very much the case with Berlin on Sunday, where it was Gietzel and Lasse Andersson who really had to carry the team through the game. It's funny because a little bit like the game against Barca a few weeks ago, it felt like even when Berlin, you know, had a little bit of control early doors, and when they were coming back into the game in the second half, Magdeburg just look really self-assured, and there's no panic on them at all. They just go through the thing, go through the motions. They know what they want to do, and they're confident that they'll be able to break down the opponent at some point in the 60 minutes. And that is that's terrifying, I think, for the opposition.
It is. And actually, Omar Inge Magnusson had one of the best games I've seen him play for a long time. You said he had 7 goals, but more than half of them were
6 assists as well, right?
Yeah, the 6 assists is what really impressed me, because he kept getting the ball out to the right wing in perfect timing. It was really devastating and made it look really easy. So Magnusson was just so incredible last year before his injury, and we've seen, like, gradually seeing glimpses of it. And while his box score, well, actually his box score usually looks better than his performance, because there was a game, the previous game against Gummersbach, he had 12 goals, 11 of which were penalties.
Yeah.
But I think the assists were really good. And for Fuchs of Berlin, I think they need to learn how to play with a squad again if they have any chance of winning things this season. Because they were forced into playing with 8 players, essentially, or 9 players. They have this whole system of making really good defensive substitutions. Kopliar, Mathis Langhoff coming on in defense. They've been forced into playing with a small squad with injuries that they had. And they've developed this style where essentially Matthias Gilsel is a winger in defense and does really well because he can actually run out and get those fast break goals. You have defensive substitutions that bring in Kopliar and Langhoff, and they do a good job of protecting their weaker defenders and enabling them. But now they have a bit of a squad. They have Drux, they have Vida, and in the game against Magdeburg, Vida played about 10 minutes, Drux 5. And I don't think that's enough. You know, you have to learn how to use the squad, and I think that's the next challenge for Siever, to figure out how to actually empower his team by bringing on these really experienced, good players, and not being fully reliant on Lasse Andersson and Gietzel to score 20 goals. So when they score 16, they lose the big game. You know, they're going to score you a lot, but not all your goals.
No, I think that's a really good point. And it showed a little bit, I think, in that clash of styles, because Magdeburg always seemed to prepare for individuals very well. And although they were scoring a lot, Gietzel and Andersson, they were also giving the ball away a lot. And their turnovers were being forced. I think there was 10 between the two of them. And in that first half in particular, Magdeburg absolutely stormed them on the counterattack. That was the big difference between the sides.
Yeah.
And the other aspect then was like tearing apart the center block. Not necessarily with like brilliant moves, but by forcing them to give away 2 minute suspensions. And both the big men were on two minute suspensions very early in the match. And you could also hear in the timeouts, they were talking about targeting the players. And at one point saying that Marcinic is doing nothing anymore, which is a big statement to make, but it was also true. From Bennett Vigert, because he had two minute suspensions. He was scared about getting a third one, so much so that he was brought out and Langhoff was then in as the second center block player. If you have Drux and Vida, both really good defenders, you can use them a lot more if you have them playing both ways. And I'm sure that's something they can figure out, and they'll have to figure out because the season is maybe taking its toll finally on them just as they get a full squad. So it could be good timing, but they have to figure it out. And it's only a couple of weeks till these teams meet again in the semi-final of the cup in Germany, which is good fun.
And also just a last point on Sauerkraut, who was monumental in the game. He was just tearing apart Fuchsbrunn attack. He was shutting down
the steals.
Gietzel. I know Gietzel scored 7 goals from 8 shots. The steals, but he knew his counterparts, his Danish teammates quite well. And again, they still scored 16 goals between them, but he made it very difficult for them and got that game. So really, really impressive game by Sauerkraut.
Brilliant player. Good stuff. That'll do it for the morning club. Thank you all for joining, and we'll be back next week to look back at what is hopefully a fun and dramatic Olympic qualification weekend, and also looking back at the first leg of the Women's Champions League playoffs. But until then, from Alex and myself, it's goodbye.